This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by B. Heal. Episode 7.
I was just a guy! Just a guy!
Logan gave Bamber a shake. Beside the men, Sinead glanced along the street at the twitching curtains and parted blinds.
What guy? What did he look like?
I don't know. Just a guy. He just looked like a guy.
Logan produced his phone, opened the photo app, and swiped until he found the mugshot of Ed Walker.
Was this him?
He asked, holding the phone up in front of Bamber's face.
I don't know. I can't see it. It's too close.
His eyes blinking in turn as he tried unsuccessfully to focus. Muttering, Logan released his grip on the scroat's hair and brought the phone back a foot.
No, that's not the guy. He looked different.
Different in what way?
Just different, like... different?
Jesus Christ. Older, younger, fatter, thinner? Different how?
His face was like...
Bamber gestured vaguely to his own face.
Different. Aye, like, it wasn't the same, no?
I know what different means. Aye.
It didn't have a beard, for one thing. I like, no like a beard.
Right, okay. Now we're getting somewhere.
Bamber's pockmarked brow furrowed.
Or maybe it did. I can't mind.
Logan clenched his jaw, swallowed back his rage. Behind him, Sinead's radio squawked into life on her shoulder.
Control to PC Bell. You there, Sinead?
Sinead looked to Logan for his approval, then retreated when he gave her the nod.
It's Sinead, Moira. What's up?
Bamber watched her, his face fogged with confusion.
That's a shite phone. I've got a better phone than that.
Logan caught Bamber's chin and turned his head so the junkie's glassy eyes were focused vaguely in the DCI's direction.
You're wasting my time here, Forby. Right now, we've got evidence that connects you to the abduction of a child. I could haul you into the station now and keep you there for days. When did you have your last fix, Forby? How do you fancy a week of cold turkey in a wee grey box?
His eyes went to Bamber's house.
A different wee grey box, I mean.
The expression on Bamber's face made his thoughts on the matter very clear.
No, thought not. So you need to give me something useful. Something more than just some guy.
A few yards along the street, PC Bell swore urgently.
Shit.
What's the matter?
It's my brother, sir.
Sinead said, hurriedly thumbing through her contacts.
School's been on the phone to the station. He hasn't turned up.
Logan checked his watch.
9:10. Could he not just be late?
Sinead shook her head.
He goes to breakfast club at 8. I walked him to the end of the road before I came in. He wasn't there either, so I don't...
A car trundled past. Sinead put her finger in one ear, pressing the phone more firmly against the other.
Hello? Hello, Anna. It's Sinead. Harrisy says... Aye. No. He definitely left. He should have been at breakfast club.
She listened for a moment, her face telling the story of what the person on the other end was saying.
Well, where is he?
She asked, her voice rising.
Where is he?
Logan jabbed a finger in Bamber's face.
Don't leave town. I'm not finished with you.
Then he placed a hand on Sinead's back and guided her towards the car.
Get in,
he told her. He held his hands out for the keys.
I'll drive.
Roundabout!
Logan held steady, sirens screaming as he flew across the junction in a near-perfect straight line.
It's painted on, it doesn't count,
he said, shooting a glance back in the car's rear-view mirror. A bus chugged along ahead of them. Jerking the wheel, Logan swung out onto the other side of the road, then immediately swung back in again to avoid a head-on collision with a delivery van coming the other way.
Jesus, is everyone deaf around here? Sirens, people, sirens!
He made a non-specific but almost certainly rude gesture to the driver of the van, then eased out enough to see past the bus. It had indicated to the left and was slowing down to let him by. But the road ahead was clear now, so he gunned the engine and roared on past it. Blue lights licking across the Shield bus's logo painted along the vehicle's side.
Where now?
Left past the traffic lights, across the bridge, then left again.
Traffic lights. There. The lights were on red. He ignored that fact and sped through, hanging a left at another roundabout. A proper one this time, just beyond them. Sinead gasped and grabbed for the solid plastic handle of the door as the car swung around the corner, rear tire smoking.
Been ages since I've done this.
I couldn't tell.
Bracing herself against the seat.
Left up here, past Farm Foods.
More lights, but the filter arrow was green this time. The tires howled in protest as Logan skidded the car around the bend. Sinead caught a glimpse of a terrified-looking older driver in the opposite lane. But then they were past it, leaving the junction behind them in a cloud of burning rubber.
And there's nowhere else he'd go?
Logan asked, crunching up into third and kangarooing past a couple of cars whose drivers had had the foresight to pull into a bus stop.
No, nowhere. He must have gone back home. He has to be there. If he's not...
Logan shot the briefest of sideways glances before returning his eyes to the road.
He'll be there, don't worry. He'll be fine.
He added the, please God, silently in his head, so Sinead couldn't hear it. Then he jammed his foot down on the accelerator and powered the car along the narrow, winding road towards whatever awaited them ahead. DC Niche looked up from his computer screen.
Email in from up the road, boss. There was a hold-up with the DNA stuff. We'll have it in the next 20 minutes.
Good, about time.
He was perched on the edge of his desk, studying the big board.
Any word back from Hamsey yet?
Nah. You want me to give him a ring?
Please.
Standing, Ben followed the strands of wool around the board, pausing to take in the contents of the post-it notes dotted all over it. He'd read them so often now that he knew most of them off by heart, but he'd read them again, anyway, in case this time they triggered some new idea or a potential line of inquiry.
Dead, boss.
What?
His phone. It's dead. Probably no signal.
Oh, right, aye.
D.I. Ford turned back to the board. He sucked in his bottom lip, his gaze falling on the little black rectangle circled on the map. He scratched his chin, his fingernails rasping across a day or two's worth of stubble.
You fancy checking on him?
Tyler looked down at the phone.
Already tried, boss. Told you. No signal.
No, I get that. I was asking if you fancied taking a drive up there and checking on him.
He looked back over his shoulder.
And to be clear, I wasn't actually asking.
Sinead rattled the handle of her front door, finding it locked.
He's not in. He's not here.
She said, panic rising like a bubble in her throat. She pushed back a jolly-looking garden gnome that stood at the edge of a small lawn that hadn't seen a mower in a while. Something metallic shone from the dirt below.
The key's still there. He can't get in without the key.
Cupping his hands around his eyes, Logan peered in the downstairs window into the living room. A pair of blue pajamas was spread across a couch, one leg turned inside out. A mug and a plate sat on a little coffee table, half a slice of toast left on top.
Can't see him in there. Is there a back door?
But it's locked. The key's in it on the inside. There's no way in. Shit, where can he be?
We'll call it in. Get folk out looking for him. We'll find him.
Sinead chewed her thumbnail, her eyes shimmering with worry.
Right, aye.
She reached for the walkie-talkie on her shoulder and was about to thumb the button when Logan caught her by the arm, stopping her.
Wait. Hang on. Listen.
Sinead listened as instructed, but the thumping of her own heart and the traffic passing out beyond the end of the garden path made it difficult for her to hear anything.
What? What is it?
Round the back.
Sinead moved to hurry past him, but he blocked the way.
Wait, let me go first.
Why?
Sinead demanded. She searched his face.
What is it?
I don't know, but stay behind me.
Constable Bell shook her head.
No. Sorry, sir, but no.
She ran up the path and out of the front garden, then sprinted off towards the house at the end of the block.
"Bugger it,"
Logan grunted, hurrying to keep up. Sinead was 20 years younger, though, and Logan had never been built for running. He caught up with her at the back gate. She stood there at the end of the house's back path, watching a boy in school uniform digging with a rusty spade. The spade thacked when it hit the grass, the sound Logan had heard from out front. Halfway between the gate and the boy, the shed door stood open. A badly weathered padlock hung from its broken latch. The boy had his back to the gate and hadn't noticed Sinead and Logan's presence yet. He grunted with effort as he plunged the blade off the spade into the grass and prized a little mound of dirt free.
"Harris! Harris, what are you doing?"
Her little brother jumped with fright. He turned the spade clutched before him like a weapon. It was then that they saw the blood. It plastered the front of his jacket and smeared up his chin. It pooled between his fingers and ran down the handle of the shovel in long, weaving strands. Harris swallowed when he saw his sister and Logan standing there.
"Sinead,"
he said, his voice an anxious squeak.
"Am I in trouble?"
What Hamza had assumed was the front door had in fact opened into a good-sized kitchen and dining area at the back of the house. The size was the only good thing about it. It had been tiled once, but damp had cancered the walls behind them, and most of the tile work now lay smashed on the floor. Cabinets had fallen from their mountings, smashing through the rotten wood of the lower storage units below, and an old-style porcelain sink had cracked in two, spewing a greenish-black gunge through the gap. The line of flooring was curling up in places, the edges pitted and gnawed away by rats. Alternate layers of mulch and moss and dust clung to most surfaces, and as Hamza creaked into the room, a carpet of woodlice hurried to clear a path.
"Shit,"
he ejected, burying his face in the crook of his elbow. He coughed, his eyes watering, his gag reflex demanding to know what the hell he thought he was playing at. His eyes travelled to the corners of the room, saw things there that they wished they hadn't, then shot a longing look back at the fresh air of outside. The place wasn't just giving him the bulk, it was gift-wrapping it for him and presenting it on a silver platter. Every instinct told him to get out of there before he caught something. Every thought was of turning around and walking away. Logan was right. He'd had a long night. He needed to be in bed, not poking around in a decaying old death trap filled with beasties. He forced himself to look at the squirming mound of woodlice, then shuddered at the sight of them, and at the thought of the millions of others no doubt roaming around in the house like they owned the place. Something clacked onto the floor beside him, making him jump. Another of the fat, wriggling bugs lay on its back, legs bicycling frantically in the air. Hamza looked up, then jumped back into the doorway when he saw the ceiling was heavy with more insects. Not just woodlice, but spiders, beetles, centipedes, and a variety of other bugs he didn't know the names of, but despised on sight. Part of the ceiling had collapsed. The plasterboard buckled to reveal part of a wooden beam and the underside of some floorboards above. Hamza retreated until he was standing under the doorframe. He'd heard somewhere that it was the safest place in an earthquake, as the house was less likely to fall on your head. He wasn't expecting the ground to start trembling, but the house spontaneously collapsing on him felt like a very real possibility. Taking out his phone, Hamza snapped off a few photos. The light from the door didn't stretch far into the room, so he took a few more with a flash on. The brightened images revealed more detail about the place, but fell well short of conveying the horror of it. There were a couple of doors leading off from the kitchen area. Both doors were open, and by leaning forward a little, Hamza could see what looked like a small utility room through one of them. The angle of the second door blocked his view in that direction, but he guessed it must lead into the rest of the house. A living room or hallway, maybe. The window with the trees sprouting through it was in that direction somewhere, and while he was quite interested in getting a look at that, he was even more interested in getting back into the fresh air of outside and away from this shitehole of a place. Besides, if Dylan Muir's body was here somewhere, he didn't want to contaminate the place. He cast a final glance around at the filth and debris. Contaminated any more than it already was, anyway. Hamza was turning to leave when he heard the sound. Short. Sudden. He stopped, tensed, breath held, head cocked. His eyes moved left to right, seeing nothing as he listened. A few seconds passed. A minute. Hamza's heart rate slowed. He allowed himself to breathe again. Nothing. Probably just his imagination going into over. There was no mistaking it that time. No denying it. A sound. But not just a sound. A movement. Upstairs. Slowly. Ever so slowly. Detective Constable Khaled leaned back, his eyes creeping to the ceiling above him.
Harris, what have you done? What did you do?
Sinead whispered, edging along the path towards her brother. Harris shook his head.
It wasn't me.
What wasn't you, son?
Logan asked, eyeing the boy's blood-soaked clothes and the spade in his hands.
I just found it.
Found what?
The sharpness of her voice made the boy jump and brought tears bubbling to the surface. He tried to speak, but the words wouldn't come, so he stepped aside and pointed instead. A cat lay on the grass beside the hole Harris had been digging. Most of a cat, anyway. An oblong of fur and flesh had been torn from its side, exposing part of its ribcage in a purple jelly of intestines. Its back legs hadn't been broken so much as mangled, bones jutting through meat at a range of stomach-churning angles.
Jesus.
It was on the pavement.
And what? You picked it up? What were you thinking?
Harris sniffed, his blood-spattered face burned with shame.
You can't just pick up dead cats, Harris. That's mental. You should be in school. Do you have any idea how worried I was? Do you?
Harris shook his head, keeping his gaze fixed on the ground between them.
It's not just me, is it?
Sinead asked, turning to Logan.
It's mental.
Well, I mean...
was all Logan could really add.
It had been an accident. Like Mum and Dad were. I couldn't just leave it. I couldn't just...
Sinead was at him in three big steps, her arms around him, pulling him in. He dropped the spade and buried his face against her high-vis vest, his body racked by big, breathless sobs. Logan watched Sinead's bottom lip start to wobble, then had the good grace to look away. Bending, he retrieved the spade.
Why don't you two go inside? I'll take care of this.
You've got to bury it.
Harris told him, turning his face but not releasing his grip on his sister. His words were wobbly, carried on unsteady breaths.
When things die, we bury them. That's just what we do.
You're all right, son. We do, and I will, I promise.
Sinead shot him an apologetic look, but he dismissed it with a shake of his head.
Away inside. Get him calmed down and cleaned up. It's fine.
Thank you.
She mouthed. Then she turned with her brother and steered him out of the garden and around the block. Logan waited until they were out of sight before squatting down, leaning on the spade for balance as he examined the cat. It could have been an accident, he supposed. But the hole in the animal's side was neater than he'd have expected to see, the size and placement making it a near-perfect window into the poor thing's insides. Similarly, the leg breakages were messy, but calculated. It was possible that a car could have done damage like that, but unlikely. The bones had splintered in opposite directions, so each leg was a mirror image of the other. Unless the animal had been lying with its legs spread in an open invitation to an oncoming tire, Logan couldn't imagine how they had broken the way they had. The front of the cat was in perfect condition, other than the redness matting its black and white fur. Its eyes were closed, its mouth open. It was missing a few teeth, Logan noted, although nothing out of the ordinary. He wanted to believe it was an accident. He wanted to believe that nobody would do something like this on purpose. But the unfortunate truth of it was, he'd seen similar to this before. Too similar. Once, in particular. Fishing a pen from his pocket, he carefully prodded around at the edges of the wound, trying to figure out if the flesh had been torn off or cut away. The smell from the cat's insides snagged at the back of his throat and filled his mouth with saliva. He swallowed it down, still leaning on the spade as he continued his inspection. He was looking closely at the injury when the cat twitched, its eyes opening, its face contorting in pain. It mewed desperately, piteously, its front paws kicking at nothing, its tail sticking straight out behind it. Logan jerked back and jumped to his feet, the cat's pained cries carrying across the garden and up towards the house. Its head twisted. Its eyes met Logan's, frightened, desperate.
Poor wee bugger.
And with that, he raised the spade. Hamza stood halfway up the stairs, darkness hanging heavy and oppressive overhead. The lack of signal had rendered his phone mostly useless, but at least the shite Vodafone service didn't affect the torch function. He clutched the phone in his rubber-gloved hands, directing the torchlight upwards. It pushed back against the gloom, sending shadows scurrying across the peeling wallpaper and the blooms of black mould. Each step groaned beneath his weight, a chorus of suffering singing him up the stairs. There had been no more sound since he'd left the kitchen beyond those he made himself. Creaking floorboards, rustling clothes, the odd panicky gasp whenever something scurried out of a hole in the plasterboard or scuttled across the floor. From the rest of the house, though, came only silence. The upstairs landing was L-shaped, with six doors that Hamza could see, and probably at least one that he couldn't because of the corner. None of the doors looked particularly inviting. One had a little brass plate fixed to it that announced it as the little boy's room. Bathroom, almost certainly. And yet, that particular choice of words meant Hamza had no choice but to check. The door opened with a nudge. Hamza shone the torchlight inside, then stepped back, burying his face in his arm again. An overflowing toilet stood in the corner, a jagged hole in front of it where the floor had collapsed down into the room below. He flashed the torch across the rest of the room, finding nothing but a wash basin. An empty bath with a mildew-stained curtain hanging limply from a rail above it, and a generous amount of decay. Hamza closed the door again and turned his attention to the rest of the landing. The five other doors were unmarked. One stood ajar, giving him a glimpse of a carpet so damp it was literally sprouting mushrooms. He decided to leave that one for now and considered the others instead. He thought about calling out, but a tightness in his throat prevented him. He told himself it was his body's way of resisting the urge to vomit. That was all. Not fear. His feet scuffed on the bare floorboards of the landing as he turned to the next door. An army of ants swarmed across the edges of the frame and up the wall between that door and the next. Hamza had just decided to give this door a miss for now, too, when he saw the blood. He didn't realize it was blood. Not right away. It was a dried puddle, a stain, a congealed pool of blackish red that had seeped out under the door and glossed the floorboards. The truth of what he was looking at hit him with a sudden jolt that forced him back a step and brought a hissed expletive to his lips.
Fuck.
He should go, get out, drive until he found a signal and call for backup. That was what he should do, no question. He reached for the handle, turned.
Pushed.
The door remained closed. It took him another couple of attempts before he discovered it opened outwards. The smell hit him first. It was unlike anything he'd ever smelled before. Richer, blacker, more pungent. The bones came next. They rattled and clunked out of the cupboard and onto the floorboards as an avalanche of yellows and browns. Long, thin, child-sized.
Fuck, fuck, fuck!
Hamza croaked, the phone shaking in his hand, the trembling torchlight making the bones' shadows dance. Dylan Muir. Had to be. Everything but Hamza's eyes froze. They darted instinctively in the direction the sound had come from. Around the corner, the other leg of the L. He held his breath, stood his ground. A voice in his head screamed at him to run. Another voice, Logan's, he thought, warned him not to fucking dare. Do your job, that one told him. Just do your bloody job. He checked his phone screen again, just in case. Still no signal. The floorboard shifted noisily as he crept towards the corner and peeked around it into a shorter branch of the upstairs hallway. A single door stood at the far end. Mounted to the wall above it, the antlers of a deer skull stabbed up at the decaying ceiling. He heard the thump of movement from beyond the door again. There was more, though, this time. A squeak. A sob. The whimper of a wounded animal. Or a frightened child. The uncertainty that had been crippling Hamza evaporated, and he knew with crystal clarity what he had to do. He reached the door in three big creaks and threw it open. Hamza didn't notice the room, not at first. All he saw was the chair and the ropes and the wide, staring eyes of a boy whose face he had previously only seen in photographs.
Connor! Connor, it's okay. I'm with the police. I'm with the police, okay? I'm here to rescue you.
Bound to the chair, Connor Reed wheezed desperately into his gag. He kicked his bare feet, thudding his heels against the rotten carpet, squirming and thrashing in panic.
Shh, shh, it's okay. It's okay. I'm going to get you out. I'm going to get you home.
He took a step closer. The floorboard squeaked. Twice. A voice came from right behind him. No, not a voice. A whisper.
Naughty, naughty.
It said. And then, before Hamza could turn, something cold and sharp was buried low down in his back, and his world fragmented into shards of pain.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here.